Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. Presented by Belco Credit Union. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
I'd like to thank you for coming out to the Tattered Cover Bookstore and supporting your locally owned and independent businesses. I'm pleased to welcome back tonight's guest speaker, number one New York Times bestselling author Anne Brashears. 10 years ago, Anne introduced us to four best friends, Carmen, Lena, Bridget, and Tibby, in The Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants. Anyone ever heard of that book before? Just a few. So now, years later, she's brought the four friends and us back together for a reunion in her newest book, Sisterhood Everlasting, which is now number 7 on the New York Times bestseller list. So I'm going to just keep this short and sweet and ask you to join me in giving a warm welcome to Miss Anne Brashears.
Thank you very much. Thank you for coming. I want to thank the Tattered Cover. I've been here before and had a couple of really happy times here. This is one of the, as you know, one of the great bookstores in the country, and you are very lucky to have it. So I envy you. And I'm very, very happy to be back here. A very kind librarian introduced me in Chicago a couple of days ago, and she said, "It's wonderful. It's the four characters back again, but without pants." And this was an audience, for some reason, that included a lot of older people, and they were kind of looking askance at this. So I just wanted to clarify that they do wear pants. But they wear them in the normal way. People wear pants. And these pants aren't necessarily magical pants. Although, I don't know if you'd actually call them magical. I mean, I guess the fact that four girls of different sizes and shapes shared them is somewhat magical, as I can't share pants even with myself from one year to the next. Particularly this year. For a reason I will tell you in a moment. 10 years ago, I started writing my first book, which was The Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants. And somewhere early in the process, I discovered I was pregnant with my third child. And in fact, I brought her to the Tattered Cover when she was one. That was my first book event. And I was with my mom and her, my little redhead. And it was a book all about mothers and daughters. So it was kind of a crazy tour and a lot of fun. And it was a happy time, and it ushered in a really wonderful time in my life of, you know, writing a book and having it do well and getting to write another book and getting to quit my day job and getting to tour and visit schools and visit bookstores and libraries and meet a lot of people who love books, like I love books, and that's been a real pleasure. So I came 10 years later, almost to the day, I came back to these characters again, started writing about them again, and had a certain familiar long-ago feeling, mostly involving nausea, and discovered that I was pregnant again. So 10 years later, after I thought I was all done having children, I wrote this book and reunited these characters and sort of gave birth to them once again, and at the same time, or soon thereafter, gave birth to a little boy who is now 3 months old. And I've mostly been traveling with him, although we parted ways this morning. I'm going to see him again tomorrow. But we've been traveling together, and it has been quite a circus, I will tell you. People have asked me why I've brought these characters back together, why I've come back to them. And although it was always my intention to finish the story of the Traveling Pants, I knew I wanted to write four books. I wanted to cover this particular important time in their lives. I feel like a story isn't a story until you end it. You don't really know what you've got until you know where it goes. And I didn't want to just sort of limp along in an open-ended way until everybody got sick of them and sick of me at the same time. So I figured, let me write a real story. Let me write a beginning, a middle, and let me write an end. And so I did that. And as I was writing the fourth book, I realized that I was going to be really, really sorry to be without them. So somewhere about midway through the book, I told myself that if I was still feeling that way and still feeling inspired by them and as invested in their upbringing as I had been for the last number of years, that I would come back to them. But the promise was that I would try some other things first, create some new characters, try and stretch out a little bit as a writer, and also avert my gaze from them for a while, let them grow up a little bit without me watching. So I did. I wrote a book called The Last Summer of You and Me. I more recently wrote a book called My Name is Memory, which is a completely different sort of a book, although, as my children always tease me, it is about love, Mom. You always write about love. So I thought, after that book, after I'd written that book, I was sort of missing my girls. And I was missing, you know, I think I write differently depending on who I'm attempting to write about. And there was some way that I felt when I was writing them that is sort of unique to them. So I came back to them, and it was almost like, you know, it's hard to see your children grow up when you see them every day, but send them off to summer camp for 2 weeks or 3 weeks or whatever, and suddenly you see what time does, and you see that they've grown, and you can see them for a couple minutes at least through semi-objective eyes. And I felt a little bit that way about these characters, having stepped away from them for a few years, that I was able to see them a little bit differently. And when I started working on this book, I realized I didn't want to write kind of a rosy reminiscence kind of a book. I didn't want to write kind of the high school reunion where it was all backward looking and wasn't it great. And I realized that I wanted to write kind of a more serious standalone book. And that I wanted to not linger in the past, but to push these girls forward in a significant way and to push myself forward as a writer. And so it's for that reason ended up being, and I'm not very strategic about these things. I sort of know what I wrote when I get to the end of it. But it ended up being a darker book in some ways and a more traumatic book than I was necessarily anticipating at the outset. And so I warn you, there are a lot of spoilers out there about this one. And I hope you will ignore them if you're inclined to read the book and form your own opinions. It is, I warn you, you know, there's sort of a trauma in this book. But for me, ultimately, it's a very hopeful book. And my faith in friendship is unwavering. So I hope you'll feel that. If it doesn't feel like a hopeful book to you, I think I didn't do my job well. I'm going to read you a little bit from it. And then if you have any questions for me, that's my favorite part. So please ask anything you can think of. Movie stuff, books, babies. Anyone know how to fold this new kind of stroller they have? It's causing me a lot of grief. This is from the prologue. Once upon a time, there were four pregnant women who met in an aerobics gym. I'm not joking, that's how this story begins. These large, fit, sweatband sporting women bore four daughters, all born in and around the month of September. These girls started out as babies together and grew to be girls and then women, a sisterhood, if you will. As I look back on them, on us, I realize that though we aren't related by blood, we are like four siblings. The Septembers, as we called ourselves, are governed by the laws of birth order, even though we are all basically the same age. Lena is the oldest. She is responsible, rule-abiding, selfless whenever required, steady as a metronome, and not always a thrill a minute, to tell you the truth. She knows how to take care of you. She knows how to be an adult. She knows how to be serious. She doesn't always know how not to be serious. I admit that I, Carmen, am a classic youngest child, compounded by the fact that I grew up as an only child. There's no end to my self-centeredness when I get going. I can be bratty and tempestuous, but I am loyal above all. I am loyal to who we are and what we have. I'm worshipful of my sisters and worshipful of our sisterhood. I am not cool. You heard it here first. I feel like a mascot sometimes, the guy in the giant-headed fuzzy animal getup at football games, melting away inside that suit. When it comes to us, I'll throw anything in. B is our true middle child, free as a butterfly. She loves you, but she doesn't care that much what you think. She's not afraid. She's got the rest of us holding that down. She's free to compete, free to fail, and free to laugh about it. She can be reckless. She's got less to lose. It's been a long time since she had a mother. She's such a force, you forget she gets injured. You'll see her stagger and realize she needs help long before she does. Your heart goes out to her. She doesn't know how to feel her own pain, but she can feel yours. Tibby is our younger middle child, our sly observer. She's the quiet kid in the big Irish family who only wears hand-me-downs. She can be cynical, instantly judgmental, and devastating in her cleverness. She can also, as an old friend memorably put it, change her mind. She has a gift for exposing the lies we tell other people, the lies we tell ourselves. All of this is casing around an exquisitely sensitive heart. She doesn't turn her wit against us, almost ever. She entertains us with it and uses it in her scripts and short films, if only anybody would produce any of them. Sometimes Tibby's wit sweetens into wisdom. I think that's what she gives us. There was a significant epoch in our lives when we organized our friendship around a pair of pants. Really, pants. We called them the traveling pants, and according to our mythology, they had the power to keep us together when we were apart. Our pants were lost in Greece almost exactly 10 years ago. How have we fared at keeping together since we lost them, you ask? That is a question. Growing up is hard on a friendship. There's no revelation in that. I remember my mom once told me that a good family is built for leaving because that is what children must do. And I've wondered many times, is that also what a good friendship is supposed to be built for? Because ours is not. We have no idea how to cope with the leaving. And I'm probably the worst of all. If you need a picture, picture me putting my hands over my eyes, pretending the leaving isn't happening, waiting for us all to be together again.
Thank you.
Anybody have any questions for me? Yeah.
So, by the way, I'm extremely happy you wrote this because a lot of others don't follow up.
I'm glad. Thank you. Who was the girl I connected with the most? Throughout the books, particularly in this book? Generally. Okay. This is always a hard question for me because I think I am inclined to give the good mother answer, which is, you know, I'm connected to four girls equally. And in some ways, I feel like I am. I mean, these are really... I remember in the early casting of the movie, there was some idea that it was going to be kind of a star vehicle, and the actress they had in mind for it was Hilary Duff, and it was going to be Hilary Duff and her three, you know, pals. And I remember thinking, oh, that's not how to do it. I don't know anything about movies, but I just know that's not how to do it because I felt strongly there are four protagonists in these books, equally weighted. So I feel as though I do connect in turn with each of them. I typically write the books very differently than the reading of them goes, in that I kind of map out the general gist and the themes of it in the beginning, and then typically I try and figure out what each girl's path is going to be through the book, and then I take each girl separately for several weeks, however long it takes, and I try and immerse myself in her story specifically. And so typically for me, I mean, there's no typical ever, but I'll randomly pick the first girl I'll write about. Say it's Tibby, and I'll start writing about Tibby, and I'll sort of reacquaint myself with her and remember how it feels to be Tibby. And, you know, I try and write a really close third person when I write. So often I'll start writing in the first person and then I'll go back if I need to and change the pronouns. And so, you know, I'll think as it goes forward and I really feel very close to her again and I think her thoughts and I feel her feelings and I think Tibby's really the one. She's really the one I love most. I'm most connected to her. And then I get to the end of Tibby's story, and there's that sort of grieving period, and then I need to force myself to Lena, say. And I think, oh, I don't even know her anymore. I don't really feel connected to her anymore. What is she really about? And then bit by bit, I reacquaint myself. I become sort of more in touch with her again. Try and remember what she cares about, what she loves, and I try to love those things too. And bit by bit, my sympathy for her grows, my annoyance with her grows, my love for her grows, and I think it's really Lena. She's really the one. And so that tends to be my writing experience, going from one girl to the next. I would say that, you know, I temperamentally am much more like Tibby and Lena than the other two. I've given more of my autobiography to Carmen, although it's all very different, but I'm a product of divorce and step-siblings and step-families, and so I've definitely given her some of that, although, again, she's very distinct from me in a number of ways. And Bridget has always, she started out at least as the character least like me. I love writing her because she's like taking a vacation from myself. I get to be her for a few weeks, several weeks, and that can be really fun. So I guess I have a different relationship with each of them, but I feel like, and partly because I want to feel, I've cultivated equally strong relationships with each of them. Which I hope isn't a cop-out. Anybody else? Yeah.
Have you ever had friends like these people?
Have I had friends like these? I would say the feelings about friendship, the idea of friendship is definitely, you know, it's probably like two parts real, one part, big part, imagined. People ask me if I grew up with girls, with sisters. I grew up with all brothers. So there's definitely the fantasy element for me of imagining a life spent among girls and women. And really, to some extent, I have had very, very close friendships that I made, like in elementary school, that have lasted really throughout my life. And I've gathered a couple more really close friends along the way. I have two really close friends from college. I have, you know, a couple of close friends from my old job. I try and gather just a few people and take them along with me. And, you know, I feel like friendship is easier in some ways when you're younger, when you share context almost completely, when you maybe grow up in the same neighborhood or go to the same school or the same camp, and you can talk about the same people and complain about the teacher or, you know, admire some guy or whatever it is. But you know what you're talking about. And then in the 20s and 30s, and this is some of the themes that I'm writing about a bit in this new book, the context is gone and lives naturally diverge. And those are years when it's harder to maintain a friendship. I remember in my late 20s, I had just given birth to my first child, and I spent that night talking on the phone with one of my dearest, oldest friends who'd just broken up with her boyfriend. And she ranted and she raved and she screamed and she yelled, and I was nursing this new baby. And I remember hanging up the phone and crying because I felt like we're in such different places now. Our lives were always the same till now. She and I are still great friends. She now has three kids. And she has plenty to think about in that way. And the context is actually sort of similar again. But I do think, you know, I'm inspired by those experiences of gaining friends and cherishing friends and knowing what it feels like to have to work to keep a friendship alive. Yeah. How was it to go from unknown non-writer to somewhat successful writer? It's felt like a gradual thing, although I look back and it wasn't really that gradual. I had very low expectations going in. You know, young adult books, although they are huge now, I mean, it's the most, in some ways, exciting, most successful, hottest part of the book industry. I mean, I don't know if I'm totally up to date with that, but it seems like, you know, with Stephanie Meyer and everything else, it's just like, and 10 years ago, it was really dead. Publishers were publishing very little. There wasn't much to offer. Not a lot of people were writing. There was just a lot less there. So that's how come I got to be successful, because nobody else was doing anything. No, I'm kidding. That's an exaggeration. But I felt like it was more open in some ways. But because it was so dead, I remember a publishing friend said to me, I asked her if what she thought would happen. I was secretly asking her if she thought I could ever quit my job, which I was eager to do. And she said, if you sell 5,000 copies, you will consider yourself lucky. If you sell 10,000, consider yourself a real success. But, you know, don't like go yell at your boss or anything. And so that was, you know, I was an unknown author. It was a hardcover. It was a pretty slow market. And so I went in with very low expectations. And, you know, the publisher decided, I thought it was going to be kind of a throwaway book, like a paperback original. And the publisher decided to publish it as a hardcover, and they made sort of a deal of it and made a galley and handed it out to a lot of booksellers. And it was really independent booksellers who read it and started a little bit of buzz and started talking about it and hand selling it to their customers, which is how a book gets popular, which is why independent booksellers are as incredibly important as they are, because they love books and they tell people about books and they establish books and reading in a way that other places don't. But so there were some good reviews and that helped. And I remember they published, I think it was 20,000 copies. And I was like, that was unbelievable. And then, I'm giving you a very long digression of an answer. The book was published on September 11th, 2001. And it was just one of those surreal experiences of looking forward to that day for, you know, 9 months, gearing up, September 11th. That's the day my book, I'm going to be published author. Oh my God. And then of course that day dawned. And when I went to sleep that night, I was thinking, oh my God, the book I forgot about. I mean, it was just, you know, there was tragedy everywhere. I live in New York, and I mean, for all of us everywhere. And it was just, the book was just wiped out of my mind. And I remember thinking, well, there'll be other books, there'll be other opportunities. And so about November, I got a call that it had made the bottom slot of the New York Times list. And that was the kind of the first inkling I had that maybe it was salvageable, that maybe it would find. And I remember that was just that as sort of an isolated experience, feeling like that is so big. And whatever else I do in my life, whatever other successes or failures I may have, I was number 10 on the New York Times bestseller list, you know, and that was a real thrill. And then it just kind of went from there. I think there are 4 million copies of the first book in print now in the U.S., I mean, in North America. So it is far, 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 far exceeded my expectations. And again, it's brought me to a lot of places in this country that I never would have gone, I think, and introduced me to a lot of readers. And that's been a huge pleasure. Do we have time for one more question? Okay.
You had such a long time to get to know the girls in the traveling camp. Was your experience a lot different with the last one, when you moved to memory, to get to know those characters?
Was it harder to get to know them starting with new characters? It was. It really was. It feels like, you know, going to a cocktail party when you don't know anybody and you try and strike up a conversation, it kind of doesn't go anywhere. You think, maybe you're not going to be in my book. Maybe I need somebody else. I mean, it's slow and it's awkward. And again, the whole problem I have with beginning things. So yes, it took a while. It took a while to move on. It took a while to get up the courage to try something different, which is really important to do. And I didn't go so far. I mean, the last summer of You and Me, you know, it's an adult novel. The characters aren't that much older. It wasn't a leap. There is a love story that's very prominent. There's friendships that are prominent. There are two sisters. It's not so far afield, but it was challenging to figure that out. I wrote a whole other book in between that I ended up just putting on a shelf because it was hard to do something else. It really was. And my confidence wasn't real high, but eventually I did it, and I like the book. I feel like I did stretch out in some ways to do it. And then My Name is Memory was a whole other thing. That book was one of these things where I was walking along and suddenly there was a scene in my head. And I just ran home and wrote the first page, which is still the first page. So that was one of those ones where I didn't suffer a long time and, you know, sit at my blank screen a lot. I just thought, oh my gosh, there's this man and there's this woman. I was walking on the beach when I thought this, and they were together, and somehow their lives were in danger. I don't know why. But it was this terrible, dire situation. And this man loves this woman, and she's feeling these feelings for him, and she's worried they're going to die. And he says to her, no matter what happens, you know, even if we die, I'll find you again. It was where that came from. I have no idea. And I didn't even understand, you know, my own, what the point of all this was or why or how that could possibly be. But anyway, but I've always loved the idea of memory. So then it became the idea of a man with a memory that went back 1,000 years. And once I had that, I kind of got going because I love history and I love research. And it's sad. That's the one book I've written that has not been a bestseller. But what can you do? Thank you. It's funny because a few people who've read it have said, that's my favorite of your books, hands down. But anyway, but it was a fun one to write. So yes, it was particularly that first book after The Traveling Pants was hard. But now I feel like, at least I feel like I can do some different things, and hopefully I have lots of ideas. So I hope I'll get to write many more books. Okay. Thanks so much.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fote, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Authors on Tour Live has been presented by Belco Credit Union. Belco has been serving members' financial needs since 1936. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. Stay pod tuned in the coming weeks for many more authors as we podcast Authors on Tour.